When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who show is this?
But, like, no, I do think that there is and this is where I'm going to like wind up split right down the middle between you guys, right? Where Aaron, you're saying you don't see a universe in which the Lakers beat these guys.
No, not like there's no universe, but like, no, I don't think the Lakers could have done anything after this summer, like during the season, that makes them on par with the Nuggets or like,
all right, here's
60-40 against or something.
Here's a hypothetical. Right. And I think no matter what the Lakers would have done, they would have entered this series heavy underdogs because they should be. The Nuggets just won the championship last year.
Pretty damn good.
And return their core.
Pretty damn good. Nuggets are pretty damn good.
But like if the Lakers basically don't fuck around as much as they do at the beginning of the year and you figure out a way for D'Lo and Austin to get on the same page together more quickly this year, you get Vando more minutes earlier in the year somehow. And you figure out some ways to utilize him and optimize him more, like in the way that they were right before he got hurt, unfortunately. Now, look, he gets hurt, so it doesn't wind up mattering. But the one who really, really hurts, you know, the guy whose season really, really hurts is Rui, right? He's the guy who, at the beginning of the year, Taurean, you know, gets the nod to start over him at the beginning of the year. And essentially, because you have Vincent out, right, or bad, and then you have D'Lo and Austin starting, those second units were basically like, you know, dribble, 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 Rui save us. And I thought it got him off to a really bad rhythm early in the year. He got dinged a couple times, right? He kept getting hit in the face for some reason this year. And then by the time that he finally started starting, that's when things take off because, oh, wouldn't you know it, playing your most talented players tends to help you out. And, like, I think if they would have started Rui earlier, and full disclosure, Aaron, you and I both said at the beginning of the year that it made some sense to start Taurean, right,
heading into it, right?
Yes. You and I were both on the same page there. But I thought they stuck with it too long and you went 60-something percent of the season before you finally started starting Rui. And I just don't think that there were enough reps there with Rui starting for them to develop counters, to develop ways to more consistently involve him in the offense as anything other than a break glass in case of emergency option with 6 seconds left in the shot clock or as a spot up shooter. I thought that they could have done more, and this is where, you know, this is the culture aspect of it. I think Rui has, like, we talk about D'Angelo Russell's gap between floor and ceiling and how it is the biggest, you know, just in general of any good player that I can really recall. Rui's gap between floor and ceiling defensively is astronomical. and they need to find a coach, whoever it is. If it's Darvin, I don't think it's going to be, but if it's Darvin or somebody else, and if Rui is on the team next year, they need to find a way to get this guy to focus consistently defensively so that he isn't a complete nothing in some possessions, and in other possessions can actually really help you. And like the frustrating thing with Rui is that like it's all predicated on his scoring. If he's scoring well, he does those things really well. But that's the part of it. And like you said it on the show, Aaron, you thought that had the Lakers been better than they were heading into the deadline, that maybe they would have done a little bit more to tweak the roster and optimize the roster a little bit more at that part of the year. And if you just add, you know, a better backup center than Jackson Hayes.
I'm sorry, I'm giggling because Shams already has the Lakers end of season hit piece out like he did for a Phoenix yesterday. Like yeah. Just, how like, are these just ready, 10 minutes, ready? Like just 10 minutes after the 10 minutes after the game. It's
how is that already ready? That's crazy.
Because never mind. No comment.
Peek inside the kitchen. Yeah.
No comment. The
way that he has those ready to go is because like with both of those coaches, people know the deal, right? Like here, big preview. I have one dropping tomorrow too. Like it's coming, you know?
Hey, there you go. You're going to give us a little, you're going to give us a little teaser.
Yeah. I got to let it drop first. And then we'll talk about it on tomorrow's show.
All right.
But I find myself kind of split. I think I'm closer to Raj. I think there's a realistic world in which the Lakers beat the Nuggets. And it like that's what makes this series hurt as much as it does. Last year, honestly, Aaron, last year getting knocked out by the Nuggets the way that they did didn't honestly hurt anywhere near as bad as this one does. It didn't. So like that one is like you won a couple series, you're playing with house money a little bit, and the Nuggets were just better. They still had Bruce Brown. Even the Nuggets people that I talked to before heading into the series said that gap had closed coming into this one.
Yes. No, I agree with that. The Nuggets bench kind of matched the Lakers bench for futility here in the series. The Lakers bench didn't do a whole lot either. Peyton Watson hit a big three in the fourth tonight, but no, the Nuggets bench didn't do a whole lot, and they definitely did and will miss Bruce Brown and Uncle Jeffy. But no, there's still a gap there. And I think the interesting thought exercise is,
but it's not insurmountable.
No, like, no. What I'm saying is here's what I think is interesting, though, because what you're suggesting, if the Lakers had done a better job in the regular season preparing their best punches, right, getting their fastball tuned up for this matchup, they would have been better in the regular season and had a different seed and probably not had to face the Nuggets in the first round. I think the interesting question, though, becomes then, I think one of the reasons the Lakers got swept last year was because AD and LeBron were out of gas, having to play them in the Western Conference Finals after going through Memphis and Golden State. So I think that it was to the Lakers' advantage to play the Nuggets now, when you're going to have LeBron and AD as fresh as they're going to be. And like, look, the Lakers had their look. Darvin had the comments about, I don't like Darvin's comments about what has to change next year, injuries. The Lakers were much healthier than anybody could reasonably expect. And tonight, the Lakers literally had their entire roster. Well, no, that's JHS was not available. But outside of JHS, the Lakers literally had their entire roster available. And so I don't want to hear the injury thing. And it is unlikely that you are going to get another season like this from LeBron, AD, D'Lo, and Austin, your four best players who all played. And by the way, I think Austin's probably better than D'Lo, but whatever order you have them in. And Rui, maybe Rui's fifth, maybe he's sixth, maybe Vando's fifth, maybe. But like Rui missed some time and Vando missed some time. Those are probably your fifth and sixth best guys. But one through four and the two dudes that really matter all played. Austin played every single game, right? And AD played 70. So like that just kind of rings hollow to me, the injury thing. I do think there is more of a gap between the Lakers and Nuggets, and part of it's matchups too, right? You know, the Nuggets didn't finish with the number one seed. I think the Lakers, had they played Oklahoma City, who was the number one seed, I think they would have fared better. And that's a matchup thing.
That's why, like, when I go back and, like, I know people want to speak about Ham. I don't want to put the body in the casket yet or have people deal with dead bodies. But, like, I think, like, you know, when you go back to this season, and that's the part that's the most frustrating. You talked about the healthiness of LeBron, of AD, of Austin, and most of the guys, really, other than Vando, you had a chance to meet, at least gain, like, to build on the continuity from last year. And I feel like we didn't, right? And a lot of and where I see that the most, Aaron and Anthony, is our defensive coverages. Like, the amount of times we doubled Jokic, like, I think when we didn't need to, like, we doubled him off of, like, when he had AD on his back, extended free throw line, and Torian comes to double. And, like, we left MPJ and Jamal Murray for threes. And it just felt like we had so many lineups bundled together. We were trying to make Spencer Dinwiddie and Gabe Vincent work together. I was telling Anthony live on the playback, we had, like, way too many lineups already by the half. And Denver has a very consistent rotation to where, like, it's very tough to have a consistent defensive scheme when you have, like, 10 or 13 lineups playing at the same time. So that, to me, was, like, really what killed this season is that, even with Rui just not starting until whatever it was, February, with Torian Prince starting, we went too long with the Austin, D'Lo, and Torian unit. And I thought, like, you watch Denver and you watch Aaron Gordon 100% know his role. And you look at other teams around the league, you look at the Knicks, all their players, they have a very good identification of what their role is. Mm-hmm. I feel like Rui had no clue. Like, he still thinks he's supposed to score on every possession. You watch him, he still rarely boxes out. The games where he gets 10 rebounds are there's way too much variance in that. And I think that's where, like, the gap is and where the margin is. If we had Rui in this, like, defensive-minded kind of big physical role, I think, like, we're a different team. And that's where I think I would like us to focus this summer, is to go get more, like, motor, high-energy kind of forwards. And I'm really concerned. I know you can't speak on this, Aaron, but, like, I'm concerned that we're just going to go and get another high, you know, usage short ball handler to kind of fix our problems. And I just don't think that was, like, the issue in this series.
So two things, and then I got to go. But one, I think the Lakers need, and Vando would have helped with this. Vando wasn't available that much this year, and Vando would have helped with this specifically, but I think the Lakers need some tryhards.
Right.
Some guys that just, because it's too much to ask LeBron to, I thought LeBron was bad defensively tonight. But he also has to do everything on offense. It's kind of the inverse of, he has a little bit more help on offense than AD has on defense, but it's kind of the inverse, right? Everything is asked of AD on defense, and his offense suffers because of it. And everything is asked of LeBron. He has a little bit more help. D'Lo and Austin provide a little bit more help than AD has.
Anybody does for AD.
But everything, so much is asked of LeBron. Let's put aside that he's in year 21, right? That his defense suffers from it. I thought he was bad tonight. People were on my head about it on Twitter, you know, saying he had three steals. And
one of the biggest possessions of the game was an Aaron Gordon offensive rebound over
LeBron. He was low energy.
You can't box him out every time.
He was watching people. His rotations were late. He was watching people walk to the rim. Whatever. It doesn't matter. So I think that you have to account for that in roster building. I think the Lakers need more two-way players.
Almost
everybody on the roster is a offensive guy first and a defensive guy second, if at all. I think the Lakers need more two-way players, and I think the Lakers just need some tryhards, some athletic, energetic guys to make up for, because it's not a fair ask of LeBron. It isn't.
They need. This is like one of Raj's four-letter words, and it actually is four letters or whatever. But I think it's a soft roster. Like, you're talking about, like, offensive minded, all that stuff. But who's the, like, LeBron is your most physical player, you know? Austin
is physical. He just has.
But he can't be your most.
He just has athletic deficiencies. Here, but yeah,
when he's buck 25 soaking wet, like you know, like they really again look back at that group that won the championship in 2020, right? And there were freaking Rottweilers up and down that roster. At every position, right? The Lakers just played against one of the former ones in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope tonight. You had Caruso on that team. You had LeBron, at a better physical state than he is right now, right? You had AD. Certainly. You had Dwight. You had Markieff Morris, who at any moment, like, he didn't matter. He could have beat the shit out of anybody, right? maybe not,
but he wanted people.
He could have been thrown out of any game. Yeah. Nobody would have cared. And that, like, yeah, that's a weapon. Like when you know, it's the Bobby Portis thing, right? Like, everybody saw what happened to Nikola Mirotic. Nobody wants to test Bobby Portis.
Bobby
nobody
Portis got crazy eyes.
Yeah, and like the
Bobby
Lakers,
Portis got them
I hope
Steve
this,
Blake
I,
crazy eyes.
Yeah, I hope this offseason that the Lakers find a way to get some crazy eye to him.
So
get somebody there who like will occasionally throw the occasional cheap shot, you know?
So like one tonight, more thing the Lakers, before I gotta go.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So the other thing though is to Raj's point about all the lineups, and it did, and to Anthony, to your point earlier, it felt like Darvin was searching for stuff and Denver knew what they were going to and the Lakers didn't, right? It looked like Darvin was searching all year. To be fair to Darvin, who was he supposed to, like, who was this magic bullet that was supposed to help? Like, who else is he supposed to play? Right? Now, to that point, that's also why Austin can't play 33 minutes.
That's where I was going to go, yeah.
So, that's fair. But it's not like there's just all these like great options on the bench that Darvin was just, you know, putting.
Well, I would have tried Vando. I would have tried Vando.
I would have tried Vando today too. But it's hard to throw. It's hard to throw somebody who hasn't played in a couple months into a closeout game in Denver, like who's had leg problems, so his conditioning probably isn't great. Go play in the altitude and chase MPJ around, chase Jamal Murray around. That's a tough.
So there's a quote going around right now from Mike Malone. Quote, I think Darvin Ham is a hell of a coach. It's not an easy job. I think Darvin does it with class, blah, 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 blah. Dragonfly Jones. He goes, this is tampering.
Well, on that note, boys, I appreciate you having me. I love you both. We'll talk soon.
Hey, well, no, before you go, Aaron,
okay.
Say, because I am gonna give my thank yous and stuff over the course of the show. It's certainly at the back half of the show, but I do want to say, when I was laid off and when I was getting back on my feet and then coming off of Blue Wire and then leaving to Odyssey, no matter what it's been, wherever we have taken what we used to have at Silver Screen and Roll to whatever it became at Blue Wire with the Lounge and then what it is hopefully going to become here this upcoming off season, at every single turn, Aaron, you have been one of, if not the first person that has said, I am here with you, brother. I am here. Let's do this. Let's get this cracking. And I say it all the time. It is the Lakers fans. I hope you guys realize how unique it is to have somebody with the amount of intel and the amount of experience that Aaron has just readily available on a stupid little podcast like my own, like on this stupid little project that we are building. And Aaron, I want to say this, seeing as the season is now officially over and as we head into the off season, I love you, buddy. I greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate you. And I can't wait to keep building this thing here moving forward.
You got me emotional here. I love you too. And we'll keep it rocking. So I'll talk to you both soon.
I'm going to call you like in 15 minutes.
Okay. All right. Fine. If I don't answer, you'll have a good guess why.
I'll know why. I'll know why. Yeah.
Bye.
All right. I think we've talked a lot about the matchup here between the Lakers and the Nuggets, and we should probably kind of broaden our scope and widen our scope into this upcoming offseason. And it certainly feels like the inevitable is coming. And we have 4,400 people watching right now. And I'm going to take people behind the curtain. Essentially, what everybody in the industry is waiting for is for Rob to text Woj and say it's done. That's what everybody is waiting for. And just be like, give him the go. You can send out the tweet. You guys saw the article that The Athletic dropped. There is only one person who gets direct access to the main decision maker here. And once he drops that notification, everybody else is going to, you know, kind of follow suit. And that's why you see the article that The Athletic had where it's ready to go with, you know, all kinds of detail.
Yeah.
Mine, for Lakers Daily is going to be dropping once that we get that kind of confirmation too.
You can tell me the kitchen's burning, Anthony. Are you going to continue to let me know
there's a gas fire in the kitchen, and Darvin is there trying to, you know, put it out with a bunch of.
Is he using a fire extinguisher or is he at least using the correct tools to
He's asking Spencer Dinwiddie to take care of it. So we'll just accept or we will move forward here with the kind of underlying backdrop being that Darvin decision is already made and they are going to move on from it. So if that decision or as that decision is likely made, Raj, what direction would you go? Hell of a fire in that kitchen.
It's at least warm, right? Darvin, it's at least warm. Yeah.
They got some great arsonists on that team, yeah. Or whatever the fire stars are. But Raj, what direction would you take this to find your head coach? Because on one hand, now more than ever, you have to win immediately with LeBron. Right. You have no choice but to absolutely maximize the next 2 years tops of LeBron.
You also
have to prepare your organization for what comes after LeBron. So how would you handle this?
So I think it all depends, Anthony, on what LeBron does, right? I think most of us believe LeBron's coming back. He has a $51 million player option, I'm giving my just opinion here. I think it's going to be declined, and I think he's going to sign an extension for 3 years, a 2+1. If that's the case, then I think this needs to be a decision that LeBron is brought into. I think Anthony Davis needs to be brought into. And obviously, if Rob Pelinka is still the one pulling the levers, then, you know, he's obviously going to be brought into it. I think the best case scenario, which I don't like, I'm watching this Clipper Maverick series. It's just very unclear what direction it's going to go. But I think the best case scenario is the Clippers let Ty Lue go. And that's the coach you can kind of go grab and, you know, right your wrongs. Go pay him the correct amount this time. Just tell him it was a typo on the last contract. And we got it corrected. We moved it up a few years. We're off and a few zeros were off from the number. But, you know, we've got it fixed this time. And go get Ty Lue. Ty Lue doesn't have to move, right? Very similar to the Ivica Zubac switching from the Lakers to the Clippers, or Russell Westbrook switching from the Lakers to the Clippers. Ty Lue can stay in the same city. That's best case scenario, Anthony. My concerns are we will kind of go overboard since we did the first time head coach thing. We go and tout out the word experience, right? Which can have a positive connotation, but also can have some negative connotations to it when you bring in a guy that's coached in four different teams, right? And that's like my concern. And those are the coaches that are really on the market the Lakers usually go at. Like, I don't really expect them. I say that all this time. Like, the coach of the year this year was Mark Dagonon in Oklahoma City. By the way, coach of the year curse kind of see. So we'll see what happens to OKC in the next round. But like, that's not really the type of the coaches that the Lakers.
No, the coach of the year curse is that he would get fired next year. I don't think he's getting fired next year.
No, not fired. I thought like the coach of the year loses, or is that like the MVP maybe?
The coach of the year curse tends to, like, I think for a while there is that they would win coach of the year and then they would get fired the very next year.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, which I don't think
he's too worried about that.
That dude's a very brilliant coach. So like, those aren't the type of coaches the Lakers really set their eyes on. So that's my concern. Like, I said earlier that when you lose in the first round, you really have a license to go crazy. And I think anyone like us who watched the series go, well, actually, you might be closer than it appears. But I just don't expect them to kind of operate in that manner. So those are my concerns. I feel like it's going to be extremes with both the coaching and kind of the roster overhaul that we get. And just your question on the coaching. I would kind of, for with LeBron, wait for the playoffs to end. And kind of, I think last time Darvin Ham was like hired before even the playoffs ended, if I have that correct. He was kind of very quickly grabbed from Milwaukee.
Maybe.
I don't remember exactly. But in any case, like, I just hope there's a coaching search. I hope there's due diligence done. And again, I hope LeBron and AD are involved in this conversation. I think the worst thing you could do is fire a coach they didn't like and then bring another one that they're over with by December. That's the worst case scenario, is that you hire another coach that your stars don't believe in next year. And then you have real issues, but that's where I would
go. I think your two choices basically is to either A, hope for Lou, and that's best case scenario here.
Mm-hmm.
Juwan Howard already signed on to Brooklyn staff, so I don't think you're gonna be able to get him. But whoever it is that the Lakers get, and I'm not saying this to be condescending of the people who do really smart work in terms of evaluating like future coach prospects, because that's how you find the Mark Dagnall, whatever his name is, the Chris Finches. Chris Finch for like 4 years was the guy everybody pointed to. Is like, that guy is going to take over some team and their offense is going to be incredible. And if he gets the right assistant coaches and the right personnel, their defense is going to get after it. He's a very likable guy. Like Chris Finch, before he became a head coach, everybody knew that guy was going to be great. The guy for Utah also, who used to be on Boston staff. What was his name?
Will Hardy. Yeah.
Yeah. Will Hardy. Yeah. When he was on Boston staff, he was the guy that a lot of people pointed to and was like, yeah, that guy's going to be great. So like, I am not, you know, there are a lot of really smart people, even within Lakers Twitter, right, who do really good stuff on analyzing the prospects of some of these coaches or whatever. But to me, that kind of all flies out the window, because the number one thing that I'm looking for from the Lakers' next head coach is complete and utter buy-in from LeBron James, because Frank Vogel didn't have it. And the 1 year that he had it, the Lakers won a championship, and then he lost it because the Russ thing was such a disaster. Darvin almost never had it, I would say. Like, and certainly didn't have it this year. And by the time that again, I have this article dropping here for Lakers Daily that will kind of spell out the way that the season went. But by the time you got to this point here, where you're heading into the postseason, Darvin had lost the locker room, and you know, that started with LeBron. So whoever it is that the Lakers decide to hire, that person has to have the utter faith of LeBron if you want any chance whatsoever of maximizing what you're going to be able to do this year.
So let me ask you a question then on this, Anthony, because I think this is really tough. What we're asking for, right, is trust from LeBron. And that's just not something you can quantify, right? Like, how can you measure that when you're evaluating a coach, right? Like, you can do it on the accolades, but if you do that, then you're going off of stuff that really, like, those things don't always lead to a good coach. I think Rajon Rondo is another name, right? I think Rajon Rondo would have the trust of LeBron. But, like, then you get to, is Rondo a good head coach? I don't know. I don't know that answer, and no one does. Mm-hmm. But you'd have the trust of LeBron, right? So if that's your number one kind of – that's the number one thing you're looking for. And that's why I think this is so tough. I really think you don't know until it's too late. And like, the only guy really is Ty Lue. That's the real answer here. Everyone else that's available this summer, like Mike Budenholzer, does he have the trust of LeBron? I mean, I don't know if the Bucks actually and Cavs ever played while he was, you know, in charge. So I really have no idea if that's a guy that he would trust. But the other guy, what's his name? Fizdale, who's kind of fizzed out of the league in terms of as a head coach.
Yeah.
That's another guy LeBron, I'm sure, really buys into as his guy from Miami. So those are kind of the places you go. But I think that's a really tough kind of bar to set, right? If your bar is the trust from LeBron, that's a really tough way to go into a coaching search. I don't know how you evaluate that as an organization. That's a tough way to go about it. I think they saw in Darvin Ham, just going back 2 years ago, was, oh, this is a no nonsense guy, right? Like, and him and LeBron can at least him and LeBron and AD can at least, you know, connect from a player to player moment. But we saw very quickly, like, if you can't make the right adjustments and the right moves, it's very tough to kind of keep your kind of composure here as a Laker head coach. So I just don't know how you go into a summer and kind of evaluate it by having a trust of LeBron. That's a tough way to go into a coaching search. And I think that's what, you know, Rob and them are going to have to weigh. It does feel like Darvin's out. Like, I think we're going off of that premise, and that does seem the case. I don't think Shams would drop that if that wasn't. But I think that's a really tough place to be in, where, you know, LeBron's going to, I'm assuming he extends, right? Anthony, that's another assumption that we're making here, is that LeBron opts out and extends for another couple of years. So if he does, your team again is kind of built around LeBron and AD, and they should be involved in the coaching decisions. That's a tough place to be when, like, LeBron's trust is something that you can't really quantify, right? How would you quantify that in a coach, or like, if you're looking for a coach, how would you quantify the trust of LeBron? I don't think you can until you're in those moments, in those pivotal kind of moments, and you earn his trust, right? That's not something that's given from the beginning. I think Vogel earned LeBron's trust from their battles in the Eastern Conference, right? I think LeBron said that when Vogel was hired here, it was like they had some battles back and forth in the East. So I like, that's really tough for me to kind of gauge how you get to a coach that I guess LeBron trusts, that, you know, I don't think that can be taken in a coaching search.